This program is brought to you by Resonance FM. If you like what you hear, please support our work by making a donation at resonancefm.com/donate.
Good afternoon, you're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. So this is my first time in the new studio, the first time I've actually been in this building, which is an absolutely cavernous space compared to the old studio, with a sort of, what do we call that, Milo? Is that a balcony? I mean, is that sort of where the congregation would have been? It's an old church. What is it? Mormon church, really. Wow. So this is my first time now in the new studio located on Borough Road. Today's program features a selection of records from a backlog accumulated over the last 2 years. Some, mostly all, oddities from a vinyl storehouse called the Grammar School, or it might even be called the Old Grammar School, in a fairly unlikely place, which is a small town called Rye in Sussex. And here in this sort of what is almost like a medieval building, you have to sort of move crates to gain access to the spoken word section, which is where I tend to find many of my nuggets, as it were. And the albums there in the spoken word section in the old grammar school in Rye are packed so tightly that you have to sort of remove batches of 10 or so just to view the stock, most of which, it has to be said, is highly predictable, such as Richard Burton reading Under Milk Wood, which turns up sort of just about in every Oxfam and charity shop throughout the country. Lots of T.S. Eliot and Tony Hancock, etc. But then, quite unexpectedly, on my last visit, I found three albums which I'd never seen before, all of which relate to Lee Harvey Oswald, the supposed assassin of President Kennedy. And one of these LPs must be one of the strangest records that I've ever acquired. It's basically Lee Harvey Oswald's mother reading out letters which were written to her by Oswald from Russia. So this was before the assassination, which took place in 1963. Oswald apparently was in Russia and was writing to his mother, and then sort of presumably sometime after the event, someone in their wisdom thought it... thought there might be some mileage in issuing a record of this. So after I should play a section of that. Then there'll be a double LP of readings of court testimony from Oswald's trial. I won't be playing the whole double LP, just a small section, the political section, in which a witness testifies about the kind of weapon that was used, but which the witness decides could not have been used. So the shop also has an extensive collection of steam engine recordings, again, most of which tend to be fairly repetitive, and again, most charity shops would probably have one or two steam engine recordings. But on my last visit, I came across a hitherto unknown subgenre called Trains in Trouble. And these are recordings of steam engines on the verge of breaking down, struggling up hills and emitting steam erratically. I wonder if I am subconsciously identifying with the trains, or are they a metaphor for these broken times, or perhaps both? Which brings us to the situation here, where I'm being ably assisted by Milo here in the studio, and we are indeed having a few glitches here, namely that we only have one turntable, so it's almost like the broken down trains are kind of like a metaphor for this situation. But we'll have to muddle through by sort of changing records instead of lining them up whilst one is playing or something. So these will be interjected with some rambling Sid Rumpo for essential comic relief. But first, a mystery record, something I was unable to listen to at home in advance because it's a 78 RPM shellac with the mysterious title OW, spelled O-W exclamation mark. And I've only heard it at 45 RPM, which makes it even more peculiar. And I should perhaps just read the label before we kick off with this one. It's on the Parlophone label. And actually it's called You Gotta Go OW. It's O-W-W exclamation mark. By Count Jim Moriarty with Gravely Stevens. And then in brackets, Pharmacological Pianist. And the Mast Alberts. Now, it does occur to me, as I'm staring at it now, it could well be Spike Milligan in a different guise. But anyway, we'll play this as a bit of a comic relief from Lee Harvey Oswald, which is coming later.
But you gotta go OW. You gotta go OW. You gotta go OW. If you wanna go OW. Yeah! You gotta go OW.
He's just been ill.
You've got to go out. You've got to go out. You've got to go out. If you want to go out. You say it every morning. Say it every night. You say it underwater. You've got to go out. You've got to go. You've got to go. If you want to go. If you want to go.
Yes, I think that almost certainly is Spike Milligan. Would you have recognised him from that, Milo? Yeah, it seems Seems likely. He's operating under a pseudonym there, Count Jim Moriarty. In fact, on the flip side, in fact, it does make reference to Eccles on the other side, which was certainly one of his, with Mr. Reginald Owen and his excruciating orchestra. But it must have been, it's called a goon disc on the other side. So there we go, it's the goons. But it's a pretty obscure one, I think. Okay, so now we're going to press on with the more serious stuff, which is this is Lee Harvey Oswald's mother reading out letters from that Oswald sent to her from Russia. Okay, so this is just a standard 33 RPM.
Hear my voice, and hear me read this boy's letter, that you will understand what I mean. Thank you for listening. This is Mrs. Marguerite Oswald speaking, mother of the accused assassin of President John F. Kennedy, Lee Harvey Oswald. I had no contact with Lee after his so-called defection to Russia for 20 months. Then I had extenuating circumstances that I thought was extenuating, so I made a personal trip to Washington, D.C., which was in January of 1961. I was in conference with four state officials, and approximately 4 weeks later, I received the first notification from the State Department of my son being alive, and also his address. Imagine, after 20 months, not knowing if my son was alive or dead, to receive this wonderful news. I felt like my trip to Washington had accomplished this, and I was grateful for the State Department in giving me Lee's address. I immediately wrote to Lee, and he answered me. However, I do not at the moment have his very first letter to me. It is either lost or in my safety deposit vault in another city at this particular time. Then I answered his first letter, and now I will begin to read the correspondence between my son and myself. These are his original letters written to his mother from Russia after a 20-month period of not knowing whether he was alive or dead. To me, these letters will show the American public a much better view of the boy who is being exploited throughout our nation. So far, I am very much concerned about the picture that has, up to date, been presented about a human being accused of assassinating a president. I do not say that this boy is a perfect boy. I myself am not perfect. We are all human beings, but I do have evidence, which I am now ready to present through this recording, that we will have a different picture of Lee Harvey Oswald. This is his second letter to me. Dear Mother, received your letter today and was very surprised that you are working on a ranch. Where is Crowell, Texas, anyway? How is it that you decided to go there? I am glad that you think Marina is beautiful, and I shall be good to her. She doesn't have a mother and father. They are dead, but she has a lot of aunts and uncles here in Minsk, and also in Leningrad, where she was born. She was living at her aunt's place when I met her. They are real nice people. Her uncle is a major in the Soviet Army. She works as a druggist. She finished the university 2 years ago for that occupation. We are in good health, and I am glad that you are with good people also. Love and kisses, Lee. P.S. Marina sends her love also. Before I continue with Lee's second letter, I am going to say that Lee is a very bad speller, and his English is very, very bad. And by now, he is using phrases that I would say are Russian phrases. You will notice as I continue many of such phrases. Dear Mother, I received your package today. Thanks a lot for all the nice things. You really should not have bothered to send those little things. It's so expensive. I really now only need literature, and every now and then some chewing gum, like you sent me before. In the future, please only send very light and necessary things. I wrote Robert, and he was surprised that you are working in Crowell, Texas. Don't you ever write at all to each other? We are getting ready to see you all, but it is a long process, especially for Marina. Well, that's about all for now. Love and kisses, Lee. Dear Mother, Received your package of books yesterday. Thanks a lot for them. I am very glad to have them. I hope you are feeling well and are enjoying your stay in Vernon. How is the weather in Fort Worth and Vernon now? I suppose it must be still pretty hot there, although here it has already turned quite cold. Do you ever hear much from John? How is he? I am receiving a letter from Robert about once a month now. In the future, if you send me some books, you can send me Time magazine, not four times, and books like Close to the Wind. I don't really want, they are too heavy, and you could have sent me several smaller books instead. But it's not important. You made a very good choice in these books, and I'm grateful. Well, that's about all for now. Marina sends her love, love and kisses Lee. When I sent the books four times and Close to the Wind, they were books that I had in my possession, because up until this time, I myself was working as a practical nurse for $25 a week, a live-in case, 24 hours duty. I had devoted myself to helping humanity because of Lee's defection and not knowing whether he was alive or dead. So actually, I didn't have any reserve money in order to buy postage, which is very expensive to send heavy things to Russia, and also to buy books. But my son didn't like my choice. I'm going to read this little part again to show you, even though he didn't like my choice, he says, "It's not important. You made a very good choice, Mother. This is what I'm trying to bring before the public, the difference in the boy now that I am telling about and the difference of what the newspaper accounts have exploited."
Yeah, so that was Lee Oswald's letters to his mother from an album on Broadside Records, which was actually issued in 1964, which is surprisingly sort of close or soon after the assassination of Kennedy. Extraordinary that anyone should have issued such a record. And it was done on Broadside Records, seems to be a subsidiary of Folkways Records. And comes with notes. And in fact, there's a portrait of Margarita Oswald, Lee Harvey Oswald's mother, a portrait of her by Diane Arbus, which is quite a striking image. Quite a bizarre item, I think. Can't imagine it got too many airplays. Now we can move. So there were 13 letters altogether on that LP. I'm now going to move on to the Oswald case. This is Mark Lane's testimony to the Warren Commission. This is a double LP, and this is side three, which is described as beginning Oswald's political background.
It is interesting to note that when Oswald was arrested, we were informed immediately that he had used an alias place in reference to that rifle, which they had secured yesterday on the sixth floor of the book depository building. It had in fact changed both its nationality and its size, and had become from a German 7.65 Mauser, an Italian 6.5 carbine. And further, Mr. Wade stated for the first time that as soon as Oswald was arrested, they knew that he had used another alias, in addition to the alias H.O. Lee, because they said they discovered when Oswald was arrested on his person, in his pocketbook, an identification card made out to A. Hedell with a picture of Oswald on the identification card. It is interesting to note that the name of H.O. Lee, an alias, was released immediately, although some investigation was required to secure that alias. But the name A. Hedell was not released as an alias until after the FBI report was made, indicating that Oswald had purchased a rifle under that name, although that alias, if the district attorney's office is being frank with us, in the description of how they determined that alias was known to the district attorney's office at the moment of Oswald's arrest and search. If I were permitted to cross-examine Mr. Wade and the officer, Officer Weitzman, who discovered the alleged murder weapon, I would seek to find out how the most important single element in this case, or any other murder case, the most important physical evidence, the murder weapon, was so incorrectly and erroneously described when it was first found. Now, Mr. Wade is a very distinguished prosecuting attorney. He has been one for some 13 or 14 years, I am told. And prior to then, he was an agent employed by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. I would like to know how Mr. Wade could have been so wrong about something so vital. I wonder how it was possible for any number. But in addition to that, one must wonder if that rifle is capable of the performance which the prosecuting authorities allege that it gave on that day. An Olympic rifle champion, Hubert Hammerer, said that he doubted that that rifle could fire as the prosecuting authority insisted that it did on that day. At this point, Congressman Ford asked a penetrating question. He said, "What nationality is this Mr. Hammerer?" There seems to be agreement that the period of time between the first shot and the last shot was between 5 and 6 seconds. There is a very serious question in the minds of anyone who has ever fired a rifle with any expertise as to the ability of any expert to fire that quickly and that accurately using an Italian carbine, 6.5 millimeters, armed with a telescopic sight. Various persons have tested various lots of ammunition utilized for that weapon. A member of the board of directors of the National Rifle Association told me that he tested more than 30 rounds of that ammunition just a little while ago. He told me that 20 of those rounds did not fire at all, and 6 of them were guilty of hang fire, which is a phrase which he explained to me, which indicates that the not the value of the ammunition was of any value. Your article that he went with a rifle expert and they secured 20 rounds of this ammunition, took them out into the woods, and of those 17 were duds, only 3 fired. The fact is that the ammunition manufactured for that rifle is extremely old ammunition, in most cases manufactured prior to or during World War II. While there may be some question as to whether or not a rifle expert could secure such excellent performance from such a rifle, or whether or not anyone could secure decent enough ammunition to secure such a performance, there is general agreement, absolute agreement, that only in the hands of a rifle expert could one attempt to come as close to that kind of shooting as it is alleged that Oswald did on November 22nd. Was Lee Harvey Oswald a rifle expert? The New York Times reported on November 23rd, quote, "As Marines go, Lee Harvey Oswald was not highly regarded as a rifleman," close quote. Now, of course, it has been alleged on occasion that Mr. Oswald practiced with his rifle on weekends at rifle ranges. Mrs. Michael Payne, with whom Lee Oswald's wife and children lived during the 2-month period preceding the assassination, and where Lee Oswald himself spent every weekend for 2 months preceding the assassination, told me that Oswald could not ever have gone to a rifle range on a weekend, since she is able to account for his whereabouts during that entire 2-month period in terms of the weekends just preceding the assassination. Mrs. Payne stated that she knew that Oswald left work Friday afternoon and that he came to Irving, Texas, at her home Friday afternoon, and he remained there until early Monday morning. She said that during that time, while she did not watch him every moment, There might, in fact, be times when she was gone from the house for a half an hour to go shopping, and she left the children behind for Lee Oswald to take care of. But she said that during that time, it was impossible for him to ever have sufficient time on a weekend to go to a rifle range and practice with a weapon there. Now, I spoke with Dial M. Ryder. Mr. Ryder is a gunsmith in Irving, Texas, employed at the Irving Sport Shop, and he told me that he mounted a telescopic sight on a rifle for a man named Oswald during November 1963. Now, unfortunately, Mr. Ryder does not recall, since that was at the beginning of the deer season, and a lot of people were getting rifles fixed or repairs or sights mounted on them during that time in the Dallas-Irving area. He does not recall what this gentleman who said his name was Oswald looks like. But he does know that a rifle was brought to him by someone whose name now appears in his record as Oswald, and that he drilled three holes into the rifle for a mount for a telescope. He stated he had seen only three rifles which required three holes for a telescopic mount: a 303 British Enfield, an A303 American Springfield Army Surplus Rifle, or an Eddystone, which is also an American Surplus Rifle. He said, therefore, he did not attach a telescopic sight to the Italian carbine, because he would, in that case, have drilled only two holes, and his records prove that he drilled three holes for a person whose name was, he claimed, Oswald, when he brought the rifle in. Now, Mr. Ryder's employer called all of the Oswalds in the Irving and Dallas community and was unable to find anyone there who stated they had brought a rifle in to have a telescopic sight mounted during November. I also talked with Milton Klein, who is the owner of Klein's Sporting Goods Store in Chicago. I spoke with him within the last two or three days, and he told me that he mailed an Italian carbine to Dallas, not to Oswald, but to someone named A. Haddell, and that the rifle he sent out already had the holes bored into the carbine, and the telescopic sight was already mounted and attached to the rifle. Augusto Marcelli, who is a correspondent for an Italian publication, stated to me that he had spoken earlier with Mr. Klein, and Mr. Klein said to him that the FBI said, "You better keep your trap shut," close quote. When I spoke with Mr. Klein, he indicated to me that he did not wish to discuss any aspect of this matter, and I asked him if that was because he was told not to talk with anyone about this case, and he said, "Yes, that's the reason." And I said, "Who told you that?" And he said, "The FBI agents told me, ordered me, not to discuss this case." I pointed out to Mr. Klein that if he did not wish to discuss the case with me, he need not discuss it with me.
Известный, местный.
Солнце.
Сегодня. Ничего. Его.
Белого. Синего.
Много.
Мягкий.
Легкий.
Что?
Конечно.
Ваш.
Это.
Вы.
Он.
Ну.
Моя.
Поел.
Стоит.
Поет.
Твою.
Ялта.
Еду.
Или.
Елка.
Юг.
Yes, well, that last track is from a sort of an instructional EP about Russian pronunciation, which, Milo, have you picked up any Russian from that? How did you getting on with that one? Now, we're going to try this one on this slightly erratic turntable. We're having a bit of trouble here with this. The record's kind of slipping on the turntable, which might produce an interesting effect. I don't know. We'll give it a try anyway. So this is a classic Rambling Sid Rumpo in Concert, Volume 2, and it's sort of
The islanders do sing the apostle's sweet lament, which goes to this fashion. Yeah. And the rules are born in the land.
I grotted my knuckles. For Bonnie Wee Joan. But now she's run off with a plumber from Sidcup. So I lurk in the forest and whirdle alone. Hey, Mary Down, crumpled in Lido and other colourful affectations. I'm going to sing you now another cartoon song, this time from Ireland. 'Tis a lament sung by the itinerant peddlers of they parts as they lurk in the peat bogs, tinkering with their grummets. So this young tinker sings to his fair Colleen, if you will give me all your love, then I shall give thee jewels and perfumes and a ribbon for your hair and an old pair of boots what belong to my granny. I'll need resoling, but they'll do you a treat for getting in the coal. All these things shall I give thee, he sings, if you will give your love to me. And then she sings, well, where are they then? To which he replies in song, well, I haven't gone with me, but can I have a little bit on account? And she then sings Tura Lura Musha Musha Wara Wara, which freely translated means sling your hook, O peddler man, or else I call my husband O. And so he goes, but as he goes, he sings this song. Sing in winter, a life of the tinkers, life from cock to old trolley, oh. For I will give thee pots and pans if you come a tinkering with me. Me, oh, if you come a tinkering with me. With a tumble down tick and a rooney o' day, sing cross up a faldy roll doe. I'll treadle my crumple for many a day if I don't get a stitch in me side o, side o, side o. I don't get a stitch in me side o. And thank you very much indeed. Very nice. Here is a fable song from fabled Clacton. It is. Ah, you're from Clacton, are you? Well, you know it then. It's the. Yes? I'm glad to see you're familiar with these old folk songs. It is the Clacton Bogle Picker's Lament, sung by the itinerant lummock mongers of they parts, who hang about the foreshore picking their bogles and munging them at passers-by. Which is one of the reasons that people are going abroad more than ever before. As 21 boys my swogle did I plight, and many's the lummock I did scrope beneath the pale moonlight. Sing all away me pothit Meg, there's limpets on me dando. Now I am old and sear, my boys, my swoggle's silvered o'er. I cannot scrope me lummocks, and my heart it is full sore. Sing all away me pothit Meg, there's barnacles on me dando. Now all you jolly sailor men who listen to my song, come plight your swogles while you may make us stay fresh for long. Sing away now, pothit Meg, there's an octopus on me dando.
Yes, well, that's a classic track from Rambling Sid Rumpo in Concert Volume 2. And ably assisted by Milo there, the record is slightly warped, and so in order to give it some ballast, I had to put a bunch of keys on the record to keep it pressed flat, too, which is a sort of like a bit of a comedy turn in itself, isn't it? Okay, so then before that we had Russian Pronunciation. Very useful. And now I'm going to play a few tracks from, well, two tracks possibly, from Trains in Trouble. This is this subgenre of steam engines, which it's called Steam Engines in Difficulties. And so there's a whole genre, several of these LPs, which were issued with the sounds of steam engines breaking down. I'm going to have to try and find one. Well, there's several to choose from, but the one I'm going to try and find eventually was recorded in Yugoslavia on a frosty afternoon in November 1970. The last light of the setting sun sparkles on the snow-capped mountain peaks around a wide valley, on all sides of which mountain streams, swollen by recent heavy rains, rush noisily down. In the distance, a train approaches up the valley, swings round a curve into view, and suddenly fills the valley with echoing sounds as the engine loses adhesion on the steep gradient. The three-cylinder 210 number 36048 struggles up the valley with an 800 tons train of loaded car transporter wagons, which is well up to the maximum unassisted load for this line. Passes behind some line-side buildings, whistles a preliminary warning for the station ahead, whistles again and accelerating slightly on a somewhat easier gradient, heads the train past and slows to a stop in the loop line at the station. And a note to this particular track was that this particular engine was built in 1917 in Prussia, so probably should have been retired very soon. Or now I've got to try and find the track. We're still muddling through with one turntable here. Here we are. It's track three on side two. So this is the Yugoslavian train, but actually constructed in 1917.
Thank you.
Okay. So that was that's from Trains in Trouble, Steam Engines in Difficulties. We might play another one eventually. Most of the other ones are all in Britain, actually. There was just that one isolated case in Yugoslavia of the 1917 Prussian train. It actually sounds quite sort of almost victorious at the end. It's like after that monumental struggle, it seems to actually achieve whatever it wanted to do with a sort of victorious whistling sound. So I'll play a couple of tracks now from Wojciech Bakowski, which is a contemporary album, which I bought in Leicester from an excellent little record shop there in an arcade. I'll play a couple of tracks from this, and then there might be time to play another Train in Trouble.
Tylko te najsłabsze. Niech się męczą dalej. Od nowa. Aż do następnej Grecji. Aż do następnej pojebanej muzyki. Mówię to w masce. Maska ma funkcję ochronną, akustyczną i straszącą dzieci. Wujek tylko tak żartuje. Jan, ale ma dobre serce. Coś tam sobie gada do muzyczki.
Okay, well, that was... which one was that? That's side two, in fact, band one. That was at Whittington Sugar Beet Factory in Norfolk. The Hudswell Clark Saddle Tank, number 1700 Whittington, built in 1938, which made a rare appearance on a November morning in 1971, hauling a long train of empty wagons out from the factory. Whittington approaches round a curve from the factory and, slipping frequently despite hand sanding, struggles past on the sharp climb which leads to a bridge over the River Whissy, and then, gathering speed on level track, whistles away across the fen, heading the train towards the BR Stoke Ferry branch line. This particular train is now preserved on the North Norfolk Railway at Sheringham. Okay, so that was from Trains in Trouble. And now I'm in trouble trying to find this record. Oh, yes, here we go. So this is we'll finish off with another track by Wojciech Bakowski from this album. He sort of calls himself a sort of sound poet, but I don't know if that's quite accurate. The album is called Voyager, and I'll try and... Yeah, that should be. Thanks very much to Milo for assisting me today. Thank you, Milo.
This program has been brought to you by Resonance FM. If you like what you heard, please support our work by making a donation at resonancefm.com/donate.